Midweek Wednesday style, you and I chatting it up on May 15th, 2024 on Connecticut Today, where we discuss breaking news of two debates tentatively scheduled between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. Hearst Connecticut media editor and columnist Dan Haar dropping by for his regular update also on the biggest stories around Connecticut. So I heard the headlines this morning. I heard the network news on the way in and looked at my phone, and my phone started blowing up, and Biden agrees to debates. And I said, well, isn't this interesting here? Because I will not back down from what I said several times. I thought he would not debate. Why would he? But then again, I started to think, well, some of these details now are telling me why he would. See, I thought, and I still might be right on this, I think, I thought that he might not be able to do this for the hour or the hour and a half or whatever. Why would you do this? I could see him not wanting to do this if he was in front. Well, you've got at least a couple of debates here scheduled, and I'll give you some of the particulars here in just a second, the priority points here. But right away, when you hear the first debate, now think about this. Be logical about this. When traditionally these debates happen, and I look them up just to make sure, traditionally, if there are two or three presidential debates, they tend to happen late in September and early to mid-October. You want the debates, if you're a candidate, you want the debates, at least, you know, normally you would want the debates as close as possible to the election, right? You want to have, you know, to take a baseball term, last licks. You want people to kind of not tune out and get to people who may still decide at the last minute. Because let's face it, it's the independents here or the unaffiliateds here that are going to, you know, decide this thing. I mean, most people on the left or on the right are probably saying, yeah, you know, there's no way I'm voting for Trump, or there's no way I'm voting for Biden. And then I see the first debate is in June. June. Again, if you and I are about the same age, you go all the way back to the 1960 debates, the Kennedy-Nixon debates, and then they started again, I think, in earnest, or 72 and 76 and up till the present day. And I looked and I said, yeah, these are all late September, early to mid-October toward Election Day. Why June? Well, two things, I think, and I don't think these are crazy ideas. I think, number one, first and foremost, the Biden people realize they're losing. And I've been reading over the past couple of weeks that some of the Biden advisors and the Democratic advisors are trying to hammer home to him that, Mr. President, sir, you're losing. These polls show consistently, if you step away from the raw vote, which is in the margin of error, you're losing more than half. At least now, there's still a long time to go. You know, but sir, you're losing at least half of these swing states. That ain't good. So I think that's part of it, right? You start in June because they may have gotten through to him. And it was a story the other day that he was addressing some sort of, you know, a gathering of deep-pocketed donors. And again, somebody anonymously, you know, these are closed door gatherings. No, they're not. Somebody will eventually on either side open their mouth and flap their gums and people will know what a candidate said. And he apparently said, don't believe the polls. Well, with all due respect, I guess they got to him from what I read and said, no, sir, there's a trend here. The polls where Trump is leading you, at least now they could change. They're not outliers. There's all a trend here. So that's one thing. And here's the other thing. And this was echoed by our midday buddy, Eric Erickson. I was listening to him coming in and I smiled because he thought the same thing. Not that it's important to think what I think, but if Joe Biden, what does a June debate do? Number one, it admits that you're losing. Number two, if he bombs, I mean, if it's not good, and I mean, come on, he's 4 years older than he was last time around. Not that Donald Trump's a spring chicken. I'm not saying that here at all. Because at any moment, one of these guys could keel over, and I'm not wishing for that in any way, shape, or form. But it is what it is. One's almost 82, one's almost 78. So we're not talking here, you know, Barack Obama age, Jack Kennedy age. Heck, Richard Nixon was only 46 or 47 or something like that in 1960. But, you know, the June date, gets things going and it gets it going early. And number two, if the president doesn't do real well, and if there are, you know, defined or definitive moments where his handlers or the campaign are going, oh, I mean, if you have, I don't know, if he loses a train of thought or if, you know, Trump lands a verbal body blows here, what does June allow? I know it's far-fetched, you may think, but what does June allow? It allows you time to maybe make a change. Remember, the Democratic convention isn't until August the 19th. So both of the, at least the first debate here, is going to happen when I don't think either candidate, either the president or former President Trump, are officially the nominee yet. So that's kind of interesting. A June debate. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So two things. I mean, when I heard they agreed to two debates, I said, well, oh, okay, this, okay, so when's the first one? And I'm thinking, okay, probably mid-October, early to mid-October, and then one maybe the end of October. And when I heard June, I said, well, June, now they have a second one, I guess, set for October. Now, one of the reasons that the Biden campaign is giving for June. Now, they're never going to come out and say, we're losing the swing states. Or they're never going to come out and say, well, this gives us time to make a challenge. Or they're never going to come out and say, well, people may not be gravitating toward these court trials as much as we thought. They're not going to come out and say that. But I guess one of the reasons, we'll go to the phones in just a second here. I guess one of the reasons they're giving is that they wanted to do an early debate because, what did I tell you? Ding, ding, ding. So many states have early voting. Now, and I'm looking at a story here from the National Review online, and they make a great point. What the Biden campaign maybe wants to avoid as well is a 1980s scenario where there was a Ronald Reagan Jimmy Carter debate about a week and a half, 2 weeks out from the election, and that was a nip and tuck battle heading into that debate. 80 million people watched that debate out of the 100 million who ended up voting. And it contributed, most people say, in a big way, says here, to a race that was polling pretty closely before that debate. And then Mr. Reagan won 44 states. So the early and what they're saying is the Biden campaign is saying, well, again, early voting here, which, again, is one of my arguments. Like, this is why a lot of this early voting is ridiculous. I'm all for a little bit of early voting, but this is why some of these early voting states artificially shift campaigns and campaign strategies to where they coax, and the left and the right can both take advantage of it. You coax people to vote who you think they're going to vote for. And then if something happens, you know, a big mess up in a debate, you know, later on, ah, crap, I already voted. I can't change my mind. Not that a lot of people would do that, but think about it. So again, the two debates here, one in June and one in September. So they don't even want to go to October, which is interesting. Now, they're saying it's because primarily of early voting. Okay. One in June, one in early September. So the Biden campaign wants the debates to be done by early September. Why? So mid-September, late September, and all of October, we can't have a debate? Why is that? What are they worried about? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. And again, you know, some of the media are making this out like it's been agreed to. No, it hasn't been agreed to, because there are a lot of other things, and we'll get into them momentarily before we go to the phones. There are a lot of other kind of twists and turns here, but the basic is the Biden campaign wants one debate in late June. So that'll be, what, in 5 weeks? Now, Trump has said, I don't care, whatever. And one in early September. So the Biden campaign is telling you and I, the voters, hey, after early September, we don't want any more one-on-one face-offs. Why is that? I don't care who you're voting for or who you're rooting for. That's not good for the country. What are they afraid of? Or do they want to leave with one in June, particularly, and one in September? Do they want to leave enough of a cushion if after those two performances they say, hey, we got to do something else here? I don't know. It's just the way I think. Tom in Trumbull's with us to lead us off today on a Wednesday. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hi, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Tom, what's
always
up?
Always a pleasure to talk to you. I think that one reason for the debate, I think Trump has been guiding, Trump, Biden, wherever, when you want to meet, anywhere, anytime. Mm-hmm. I think Biden is trying to accommodate him. And another reason I think you said why, because Trump could be convicted by then. There could be a problem. He could be in jail and need the parole officer to give him the okay. I'm just saying, that's just a wild-eyed, 91 counts, like Barr said. Only have to have one that's guilty. Only one has to fall. So maybe Biden's saying, let's just get one, and God forbid we can't have another one. Let's just have one and get it out of the way. I don't know what else to think.
Maybe. Tom, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. Could be. I mean, that's another thing. You know, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what their thinking is here. But June? And then September? I don't quite. What do you think this is? Why? I mean, when I heard Trump and, okay, they agreed to debates, I heard it and my phone was blowing up this morning. I'm reading it in the drive-through line when I'm getting breakfast this morning, and I go, June and September? Okay, September, I could kind of see, because we've had September presidential debates, but nothing in October? Why? Why are we starting so early? That's the question. What do you think? Why are we starting so early, and why nothing in October? The coffee's been consumed. I'm consuming the energy drink right now. And the most important thing, the afternoon banana has been consumed. So fiber and glucose are all with me now. Feet don't fail me now, and I'm all glucosed up. For Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Fiber, glucose, and potassium.
Yes.
I need all three of those things. I'm in the parking lot of a Starbucks near my office.
Yeah.
I got to get some coffee because I'm going out to dinner with somebody, so I'm going to go do that.
I love it. Love it. Little pre-dinner coffee. Yes, sir. Boy, Dan, lot of stuff going on here. The dust has kind of settled from the legislative session. But the one thing before we get into electoral politics and Lior Levy and the 22nd Senate District, this bill that, you know, is raising a lot of people's eyes that would have given money to strikers, two aspects of this, of course, what the bill actually does, but how it's done. Now, the governor, he didn't say he would veto it, Dan. He wasn't thrilled with it.
Yes, he did.
Oh, he did?
No,
did,
yes, he did.
Did he,
say, yes.
Did he use the word veto?
Yes, I can tell you that Mark Pazniokas' story was stronger in respect to whether he would veto it than anybody else's. Because after the press conference, I was standing around, and Mark goes up to the governor just while they were dispersing.
Okay.
And he says to him, He says, would I be wrong to say that you are going to veto this bill? And he said, no.
Okay.
So he was, that was a stronger statement than he had given in the press conference.
Yeah.
Where he said, I'm inclined to blah, 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 blah.
So let's assume, Dan Har, the veto is coming. Can and will the General Assembly Democrats, you think, override this or not?
Well, the House has 24 votes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the Senate has 24 Democrats who I believe 23 voted for it and one was absent, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Is that what you're showing?
Yeah,
I
think Joan Hartley didn't vote, I believe. Yeah, yeah.
That's right, yeah. And she might vote no, but the point, I don't think they have two-thirds in the House because it would be unlikely that a Republican would vote for it. Lamont is not wrong. It's a dumb bill. Whether you favor or oppose, strike, we can argue the point.
Sure.
Pay for striking workers after 2 weeks is not as radical a proposal as many people say. It has public policy benefits as well as it potentially swaying, tipping the scales in favor of the union. And it's debatable. But this bill doesn't do that. It's just a dumb thing where, as the governor said, too cute by half. I was in the room. And it's really unfortunate that the Senate under Senator Looney chose to run this bill instead of climate change. I would hate to think that they could have done climate change 5004. That was the bill that gave all kinds of incentives for alternative energy and things like heat exchangers and stuff like that without any mandates, without any strong mandate.
Yeah.
And I'd hate to think that he did A instead of B, but Senator Looney, and that's really the story behind the story here. Senator Looney is just not an environmental guy.
Really?
That's my opinion.
Really? Wow.
I'd like to say you heard it here first, but you heard it here when I wrote it in 2021.
All right. And do the environmental folks not have his ear, or they do, and he just says, yeah, but there are bigger things. Why is that?
He's an economic and cultural and educational liberal.
Mm.
He's not an environmental liberal. Look at he's an urban legislator, right? Listen, people try to sort of softball it, but the cold, hard reality of the matter is that alternative energy costs more than traditional energy.
Yeah.
I get that every environmentalist says you shouldn't have to make a choice, it's not a choice, blah, blah, blah. But right now it is a choice.
Yeah.
And mandates on the environmental side cost money. And higher energy costs are regressive. And I get it. We have to move in that direction. And eventually they won't be regressive. And we have to lay the groundwork. And electric vehicles are going to be for everyone. And the price is going down. The reality is right now it's more expensive to drive an electric vehicle than not to. And his constituency is urban, low-income people and middle-income because he's in a section of New Haven that's not as poor as other sections. And New Haven is mixed economically. But for the most part, that's the answer. And it's partly what you said about him not having the ear.
Sure. Dan Har with us, Hearst Connecticut Media. Okay, couple things political on the other end of it, electoral politics. Marilyn Moore retires. Dan, the 22nd district in the state Senate, really interesting. A good chunk of Bridgeport, pretty much all of Trumbull, a piece of Monroe. And apparently we're going to have a massive primary here. So what's up with this?
You know, I was just on the phone with our friend Ben Proto, the chairman of the Republican State Committee, and I forgot to ask him whether he has any recollection ever of a convention giving five people 15%. I can't think of one, but then I haven't been a politics, for nearly as long as other people, and I've spent most of my career in business news, and I think it is highly unusual. When you had a five-way primary, for example, for the Republican governor's seat in 2018, at least two of those people petitioned their way on. And so that's quite a different animal. So this is five people getting the requisite 15%. And you have a very interesting mix. You have, Bill Finch, the former mayor, who has high name recognition. Tyler Mack, who's the current member of the city council who got the most votes, and Marilyn Moore backed you know, it's five different people. Sujata Wilcox, or rather, Gadkar Wilcox. She is a professor, so obviously a reformer, mm-hmm. professor of ethics, and she's in Trumbull, right? And she's known in Trumbull. She's run as the House in the House race against Representative Rotigliano a couple of times. And so it's an interesting mix. And as you know, when an interesting mix happens, the person with the name recognition has the advantage. In this case, that's Bill Finch.
Absolutely. Could be. Leora Levy back in the news last. She ran a failed U.S. Senate race. And do I understand and read? Because I saw your note and some other people in my Republican circles are trying to keep her from what, Dan, losing an RNC seat? What's up with that?
Well, I'm not trying to do anything. I pointed it out as a potentially interesting thing. I don't have a dog in that fight.
No, I know. Well,
as you know, I'm a registered Republican.
Yes.
But she's been a national figure as a finance, as a money raiser. And Annalisa Stravato is a registrar of voters down there in Fairfield County. And she's been very active in the state party. So I gather that this is less about ideology, Trump versus Bush wing, that kind of thing, which is what you often, we in the media like to play up.
Ah, you people in the media, it's all your fault.
Every time two Republicans get into a debate, we like to play it as, you know, Trump versus anti-Trump.
That's it.
Apparently, that's not what's happening here. It's that one person has spent a lot of time on state central and is on electoral issues, registrar of voters, and was vice chair of the state party, and was a delegate from Connecticut in previous elections for Trump, and is very much a Trump supporter. And the other person, of course, famously, that would be Leora Levy, won the primary on her support for Trump and on other things. And she's more of a national figure in the party. So it's really less about any kind of rift in the Republican Party and more about who you like, is what I gather. And I have no reason to doubt that.
Finally, Dan, before we let you go to dinner, interesting story you wrote about hackers stealing a SNAP food aid electronically from a disabled Connecticut couple, and they're out well over $1,000 on this. Wow.
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like the story here is that they are out money. The story here is that 3,200 SNAP clients, now admittedly that's out of 200,000, 230,000, but still, 3,200 clients just since October 1st, the federal fiscal year, are out $1.6 million, and that's just what's reported. That's just what's reported. So this is absolutely not unique to Connecticut. There is a national wave of fraud in multiple different venues. One method they have is they put scammers on the machines at the point of purchase. Another is they're tapping somehow into the system. This woman that I spoke with had her benefits stolen right from the system. She didn't have it stolen from a point of purchase. So it again is quite a thing. And the federal government has rules that you can get reimbursed, but only twice. And she was reimbursed twice, and that was stolen.
Oh.
So she's SOL $1,378.
Wow. Dan Haar, thank you. Dan, go grab a coffee. Enjoy dinner. Dan Haar, Hearst, Connecticut media editor and columnist. Dan, have a happy week. We'll talk to you next week.
Decide whether to get a banana with my coffee. Have a good week.
Okay, Dan, thanks.